You are listening to Making Bank, where we uncover the mindset and success strategies of the top 1% so you can amplify your life and your business.
Welcome to Making Bank. I am Josh Felber, where we uncover the mindset and the success strategies of the top 1% so you can amplify your life and your business today. I'm really excited and honored for today's guest, Philip Stutz. I want to welcome you to Making Bank. Excited to have you on today.
Hey, man, I'm honored to be here. Let's roll.
For sure. When I was just kind of researching and doing some diving into really some of the stuff that you've done, I mean, it's super amazing. I mean, the different presidents that you've worked with over the last several years, helping them win the elections, to the scale of marketing and everything that you do out there today. Give me a little bit of background, I guess, how you got started. And I know one of the things, too, I read was just, you know, the incurable disease that you were fighting and kind of like, I guess, some of these different challenges we'll talk about today as well, too.
Listen, I grew up in Alabama, and I was one of the first generations of ADD kids. They weren't ADHD back then, right? This is the 80s, right? I'm 25 now. And so, you know, basically I was told I was dumb. I was put in the classes below normal kids. I always know, like, entrepreneurs are the worst at school and the best at business, right? And I get it now because I really was awful at school. But I really understood that I could only do whatever I really cared about. That's all my attention could go to. Right. If I really was passionate and believed in, I think your audience will probably understand when this is all said and done, I get ramped up and passionate about things, that I have to do what I believe in. And so I really only cared about two things growing up. One was sports and college football. And the second was, weirdly and nerdly enough, politics. I just was fascinated, not necessarily by the policy, but by the game.
Okay.
Which really was just marketing, right?
Right.
And so after college, you know, I stand 5'9", 150 pounds. So college football wasn't going to be for me, or pro football. So I basically said, I want to go work in politics. And so 24 years ago, I started working on political campaigns. And I literally lived, I was like a vagabond, a homeless person. I'd live in South Dakota for a year. I'd lived in New Mexico for like 6 to 8 weeks, working on big, high-profile U.S. Senate races, governor's races, presidential campaigns. And I just fell in love. You get a bug when you work in something you're so passionate about. You work 7 days a week. What makes me a little bit different than probably you and your background is you probably started businesses at an early age.
Right.
I sacrificed everything in my entire, you know, all of my 20s to help people get elected, not to build a brand or build, you know, or build a business or anything like that. I was just out there fighting 7 days a week, fighting for the causes and the people I really believed in. And then I realized how cool it was that you could affect sort of, how do you get a voter, convince a voter to vote for an unknown or even sometimes an unsavory candidate, right? And so I became obsessed with trying to figure out how that worked. What did it take to win? What, you know, some, in our business, we just need to get to 50+1 to win an election. So what would it take? What are the tactics you could use? What are the strategies you can use? And then I created a political consultancy agency, and I ran that very successfully until about 2014. And then I just saw the whole media landscape change over the last few years. It hadn't caught up to sort of the political marketing. And I went, I got to jump in now and create sort of a political marketing agency and take all of the 20+ years of my work and apply it to building marketing campaigns for politicians. That blew up. We've grown that to a $30 million business in less than 5 years, and with no outside investment and no debt. And I'm the sole owner of the business. And I went, man, this is really cool. Now, this is where it got interesting. About 2015, 2016, a buddy of mine who's a huge business owner, nine-figure business owner, came to me and said, I'm obsessed with politics. I want to know how you convince voters to vote for politicians and how you can translate that into business. How do you get customers to buy into companies or products or services? Because no one is telling how you guys do it right now. And I think it's really interesting. I'd like you to apply it to my business. I write the story in the book, so you can read it there. It's too long to get into now. But we had a lot of success for this business owner. We looked at things completely different. And we just have a different mindset, a different way of looking at conversions. And so then we launched a corporate marketing company. I thought I could have it all in one house, John, but so many business owners are like, your website has a bunch of politicians on it. So I went, oh, crap. So I had to create two separate companies.
Sure.
And so now we have two thriving companies that one's a corporate marketing business and one's a political marketing business.
No, that's awesome. And I mean, as you mentioned, too, the landscape, you know, I mean, even too with the way e-commerce businesses have grown over the last several years and just businesses in general, you know, going, you know, offline to online and everything. Same with the political marketing, too. There was big changes. As it was like around Obama, they'd used a lot of email strategy, a lot of email strategy for theirs. And then when Trump, he ran a more digital online, you know, strategy overall. What are some of the main things that you guys have seen, one from the political that you've taken and applied to regular corporate business?
Yeah, it's such a good question. So I'd even go back to 2004, which is where I really think it all started. And what happened is that in 2004, I was running the Get Out the Vote campaign. I was the national sort of Get Out the Vote director for the George W. Bush's reelect. And in that, I walked into a meeting one day and some of the top brass came in and said, we are going to do something we've never done before. We're going to take a massive chance, but we're going to introduce consumer data into our marketing. Now, in the past, we can get voter data. So if you're a voter out there right now, this is just a tutorial. Every single state has a database that says when you voted, how often you voted. It'll have demographics like man, woman, do you have children in the household? It'll have racial demographics, all that.
Okay.
That is the only thing we had ever used to target in our marketing voters, right?
Wow.
We're obsessed with targeting and data. Like never, like that is the one thing that I think stands out before anything else. Every decision we make has to be based in data before we do anything in the marketing of politicians, right? And so I, as a sidebar, I always tell a politician when they hire me, what is it you want to run on? What are you passionate about? They'll tell me like 10 issues. And then I go, cool. Then I'll go poll the district. Now, this is – it's much more complicated in today's landscape. But for us in this podcast, we'll say this. It's like polling the district. And then I'll find two issues that the voters that would get us to a 50+1 voter margin that they are insanely passionate about. Like they'll vote just for those issues, right? And then I go to the politician and I say, you know, you gave us 10. Here are two where you have total alignment with the voters. We're not talking about the other eight. We're done. You're not talking about them. They're done. We're staying on these two. And that's what is missing in a lot of business marketing right now is the business owner loves to talk about what they care about, not what the consumer or the customer really wants to hear, right?
Right.
So, but this all started in 04 because we combined consumer data with our voter data to create profiles of every voter based on what they cared about, not what we wanted to talk about.
Gotcha.
And it was the most disruptive moment in the history of American political campaigns, that decision, utilizing all this data to market to voters, until 2008, when Obama took and stole in a good way. I mean, he modeled a right arm what we had done successfully to reelect George W. Bush, and he took that, and then he combined it with, like you said, email campaigns and social media. Now, the targeting in social media in 08 and 12, 2012, what is not what it is now, but it was more important than it had ever been done, and that 2008, 2012, those are the most disruptive political marketing campaigns that had ever been run under Obama until 2016, when Trump married the brand Make America Great Again, with all that same modeling that we used, and then combined it on Facebook, mostly Facebook. That's where they had their biggest ROI.
Right.
And he, those three things came together. And I tell you this, Josh, because every 2 years, my entire industry gets disrupted. Every 2 years.
Wow.
And I have to think about, how am I innovating for this potential, this, you know, political candidate or elected official that's running for re-election? And if I'm not constantly disrupting my model, I am out of business. Every one of my competitors knows who I work for. So if I lose a race, if I'm running a political marketing campaign and my candidate loses, my competition, they'll cut my legs out from under me in every pitch going forward. I have to win more than I lose. I think we've now won 272 races out of like 298 in the last 5 years. And the reason being is that I either win or I die. Like, we're out
sure.
of it. And so what I saw in the corporate marketing space, and I actually heard an interview you did recently. I can't remember who it was with, but they said a quote on there. There were people that were interested and people that were committed. And what I've found is, when you're in a political campaign, the politician has election day. You're all in. You can't mess around. You can't hold thousands of meetings. You can't do bureaucracy. You can't do do a bunch of memos and talk about what we want to do with our marketing of our company and our product or our service. No, like, politicians go, it's election day, let's roll. And there's a formula because of that deadline that we've instituted in politics. And what I realized when I came into the corporate marketing space is 99% of marketers are not using the formula. 99% of marketers are work with interested, not committed business owners. And so I went, oh my God. When I looked at this model, I realized that every sports team, periods, professional, college sports team, uses this exact same sort of formula to win championships.
Okay.
And every trial attorney uses this exact same formula to win cases. And, you know, in my health, I realized that I worked with a guy named Dr. Stephen Gundry. He's a New York Times bestseller. He's my doctor. He uses this formula to try to find a cure for my disease. And nobody in the marketing, in the corporate marketing world, is following this formula. So once we decided to kind of, I go, well, this is sort of an outlier approach. No one's doing it, so we should do it. And we've had, and I walked through a bunch of examples, but we've had an incredible amount of success by doing that, utilizing the political marketing formula that gets presidents elected and translating it over to businesses.
And then, you know, I guess with that, what is kind of like the framework of that formula, or what does that look like for, as an entrepreneur, what should they be looking for, or how structuring it?
So I'll walk some 5 steps. So number one is data.
Okay.
Before you do anything, like, I can't tell you how many business owners come to me and say, well, we've been running a bunch of Facebook ads and we put some stuff on Instagram. And I'm like, but based on what? And they're like, well, we talked to a marketing agency and they told us we needed to get up on Facebook. And then they spent all this money and we had no ROI. And I went, well, of course not. Where are your customers? Where are they located? Mm. What do they care about? Are you messaging to them in the way that they care about to receive your message or not? So we start with data. I went out and made a six-figure licensing agreement with the largest data collection company in America. I can overlay anyone's customer base or client base. We do it for B2B as well. And I can tell you everything about them. I can tell you the platforms they're on in chronological order, because we track what they do for 6 months, not what they say, what they do.
Sure.
And then we do this on the political side as well to track voters. But I can use all this data, and then I can tell you their top values in life, what they value, why they make purchasing decisions, what media they consume. I can tell you everything about them. So why would I go to a business owner and tell them to freely spend money on things that may work or may not, when I can actually have data that tells me exactly what I should do and eliminates their risk? So, for example, we work with I'll give you this one. We work for a national pest control company.
Okay.
And they had lost they had run, I think, $2 million worth of marketing dollars, and they started losing money.
Right.
Their marketing budget was $2 million, and the company was losing market share. So they came in and they said, what was wrong? We went in and overlaid hundreds of thousands of their customer records over and then track those people for months, broke them out in 100 different demographic groups. And what we found out in a general look was the economy had shifted in the since 2012. They had only marketed using the language of discounts to get people to come in and buy their pest control services. The economy had improved. The customer base wanted a higher standard. Their customer base was like 65% over 50 years old, which meant there was a large proportion that had kids out of the household. They cared more about improving their community than they did raising their kids.
Okay.
We also found out that they wanted a higher standard of product, like green products, safe products, right? That they didn't want poison spread around their house. Well, this company was started 44 years ago by a family. They were using discounts everywhere. Well, discounts were looked at as cheap, according to the data, right? So they were screaming discounts, and the customer was like, ooh, that's cheap. I don't want to buy it. And they had a green product that they had never marketed to sell. It was just out there. People asked for it. They used it. So we reversed everything, and we went out and did a video shoot, and we shot the ad, and we interspersed all of these things in there, right? And so what ended up happening was if you follow the steps, there's the other steps that I'll walk you through, but they followed all of our steps. And then once they got to the point where they were ready to launch a large marketing campaign, because we had eliminated so much of their risk, they knew what would work, we launched. And it was in the summer of 2019, they had the greatest month in the history of their company.
Wow.
And the reason being is that all I ever do is look at data and then optimize what we're doing to eliminate all the risk and put all of our chips into what we know works and continue to optimize that 24/7, because that's all we ever done in politics.
Sure.
So step two is, once we know that data, you got to build a strategic marketing plan, right? Step three is, your branding is important. I write about branding in the book. A lot of marketers would tell you need to brand first, convert customers seconds. I just think you need to change the language, the messaging on your – if your website is not tailored to the customer. So with that particular pest control company, we had an 180% higher conversion rate now than when they started with us on Google, on Google conversion. So – and the reason being is because when people want to hire a pest control company, they don't go, oh, who's got green products, or who's a family-owned business? Or I said, no, they want their bugs dead. That's why they go to Google and they go, oh my God, there's a roach in my house. I need a pest control company. Now there's a menu of 25 pest control companies they're going to choose from. What's the difference that makes the difference? The reason we've increased their sales by 180% on Google is because we tell this story of what the data said. And I tell you that because we had to improve their brand to make sure. So when they went to their website, all of a sudden the difference between them and the other two companies they clicked on was, oh my God, these people speak to me. They have a green product. They're a family-owned business. Oh, it's a video. I'm not buying a picture.
Sure.
I'm buying a video where people are talking to me. All of these things they had never done before. It's crazy, right? But what we came to that was really step four, which is, before you spend a lot of money as a business owner, you should take that data and you should test all the messages and figure out what works the best.
Okay.
At a low cost, which is usually the difference between what I do and others. Some people go, oh, we need to spend hundreds of thousands of dollars on a testing program. Nope. I don't like banner ads, but I like banner ads to test messages, because if I can get you to click on a banner ad, that means something worked in that messaging. And so, for example, we worked with an apparel company, a national major apparel company. And when we went in and started testing some of their concepts, we found out that women responded to social proof, third-party validation. The most effective message test we did with them was the 5-star review ad. It crushed with women.
Okay.
Men, this is a whole nother podcast we can do at a later time, but I try to get all my clients to run comparative ads like we do them. Not like the concept principle is the same, like utilizing the negative ad in politics, but using it in a way that doesn't offend customers or anybody when you do it on the corporate side. So we did a comparison ad where we put an ad out to the customer base, and we said, why would you buy your clothes from a shoe company? Just don't do it. All right. You're not offended by that,
right?
Are you offended by that?
No.
No, but it's a shot at who?
I mean,
just don't do it.
Yeah, yeah.
Right?
Right, yeah, because you just don't do it.
We kind of lumped them all in. Don't buy your clothes from a shoe company. Just don't do it. Well, women didn't click through that ad, but men crushed it. I mean, crushed it. Because we're trying to find a deep emotional connection with the customer and the company's product or service. That's all I care about, is the deep emotional connection. That's all I've ever done in politics, is try to find a deep emotional connection between a voter and a politician. And now we're just translating it in. Now, once we've done all this testing, we know what ads rise to the highest and best, which ones we know are going to work. And then we say, all right, company X, let's go for a full-fledged marketing campaign. Let's spend some money, because we know it worked. We've eliminated your risk.
Right.
We know what your customers want. We know where they are. We know what they click on. Now you can go run a marketing campaign. So that's the model of politics. By the way, in sport, who's your favorite sports team?
Dallas and the 49ers. I grew up with both of those, and so it was like,
all right, let's do the 49ers.
49ers made it in so far, the Cowboys didn't.
All right, so let's do the 49ers. The 49ers, the first thing they do after a playoff game, right, is on Monday they come in, and what do? They review data. They review the film either of their past game or of the future opponent, right? Then the coaches put together what? A strategic game plan on how to beat the next team. The third step is the owners of the 49ers clean up the stadium. They wash the jerseys. The brand is on point, right? The fourth step is they go practice the plays. They practice, they test what plays are going to work against that future team that they're going to play and what plays don't work because they can't execute them in practice.
Right.
Then they go out and play the game on Saturday. They launch. They launch the campaign. They go play the game on Saturday. If you were a championship-winning sports team, that's what you do. By the way, if you're a losing team, that's what you do. That everybody in sports uses this model. Everybody in politics uses this model. Everybody in as a trial attorney uses this model. Marketers are not using this model to grow businesses' bottom lines, and I think that's insane. And so that's what I'm trying to teach business owners that we work with.
No, that's awesome, because I can see when you were – and actually I was listening, you're like, oh, yeah, we went and shot videos based around this. And that's one of the questions, like, oh, well, you can use that, because we shoot a ton of videos for our health brand and everything here. And if – obviously if the messaging isn't on point, you're not going to pull the bright people in, you know, to come, you know, want to take a look at the business and what you're offering and everything else.
So we've worked for a health food big eight-figure health food supplement company, right? And I'm obsessed. I call it comparatizing. So it's like when I called it negative advertising, everybody got offended in these companies I work with. Because I work in politics and, you know, we take sledgehammers to people's heads. I don't think twice about it. But in business, it's not that. It's just the concept, right?
Sure.
So with this health and supplement company, we found out when we overlaid, I think, 175,000 customer records, tracked those people, and found out that 50% of this company's customer base was vegan and vegetarian. 50%.
Oh, wow.
And we found out that 75% of this customer base hated soda. Don't ask me how the data comes together. I don't know, but it makes sense. But
right.
How the hell would you know that? Like, who would come up with that, right? So I went, okay, we're going to test this out, okay? So we went out and tested 10 concepts that we found in the data with this health and supplement food company. And 9 of them were positive. In fact, the number one performing positive ad that we ran for them was about buying their vegan vegetarian products, right?
Okay, sure.
The testing we did. Of the 9 positive, it was number one of all the positive. But then I slipped in one comparatizing ad, right? And it was an anti-soda ad. It performed at a – compared to the vegan vegetarian, the top one.
Right.
I'm just comparing it to that one, right? It had a 2x click-through rate over the top positive ad, had a 20% higher conversion rate.
Wow.
And it wasn't offensive.
Sure.
It was basically their customers, yes, they all don't like soda. So attacking the soda industry offended no one in their customer base. It was the most successful ad we ran. And this is what I keep telling people. We're in a day and age where everybody's got their phone in front of them.
Yep.
And they are building no emotional connection to the product or service. So you must figure this out, the emotional connection. I do it through data, but you must figure out how can I emotionally connect with that with that customer through the brand or product that you're putting out there. It is the most critical thing right now. The struggle I see so many business owners that I work with on the small business side is I go in and they have no video whatsoever in what they're doing, none. And I'm like, how many people are buying a still photo?
Sure.
Or are they going to buy, you know, I think the Wharton School of Business now says 50% of all purchasing decisions are coming from third-party validation, whether it's reviews, whether it's video, whatever it is, it's third-party validation. You don't get third-party validation in a mass scale from a picture. You get it from a video, or you get it from a third-party validator on a video. That's how it works.
Right.
We want all the data. We know this, right? So this is what we try to get business owners to try to see. And once when I go back to this, interested or committed? Committed business owners, everybody that has worked with us has grown their bottom line. Every single company has grown their bottom line. The interested business owner goes, I'm interested, but where's my get rich quick pill?
Right.
I just want to take the pill. And I don't work with those business owners. It just doesn't, it's not a good fit. If you're committed to the process, sounds like I'm Nick Saban saying this, Coach Nick Saban of the Alabama football team, he calls it the process. If you're committed to this 5-step process, you will grow your business. It happens every time. So I don't care if it's not with me. Follow this model and you will grow your bottom line.
No, that's awesome. And, you know, I guess obviously like with Facebook and some of these different platforms and, you have data there. But then it's the next level that I looked at, like for our stuff, was there were several big companies out there and data. But just for us to go do it was like six figures, like just to go get that data.
Yes. So I identified this as a problem in the marketplace. So 2 years ago, I went out and spent six figures on the licensing agreement that this data company that we work with, the largest data collection company in America, they were charging every corporate client six figures.
Right.
I got the exclusive licensing agreement. I now can offer it at 95% off because I wanted businesses to have
That's
the same
awesome.
Kind of data that the Fortune 200 – we work with multiple Fortune 200 companies. And I said small businesses should have this opportunity. They should be able to have the data and utilize it in their business and grow. And so that's when we put that together. And so we offer it at between – depending on how many segments you do, but we start at $5,000. That's it. It starts
okay.
at $5,000. It can work its way up. You're like, hey, I want to look at 20 different audiences. And obviously, there's more on top of that. But I offer it at a massively reduced cost because I said no one's I can own this market. No one owns this
right.
market. And by the way, when I give you this data report, it's a 65-page deep dive into everything your customers feel, their top values in life, what they consume online, what can they consume offline, how they like to receive their marketing, and the platforms, the social media platforms they're on. All right, as an example, we worked with an Instagram influencer. She had built 1 million followers on Instagram. She sold products and services through her following on Instagram. She also had begun getting on stage and doing conferences with her customer base, right? And she said, came to us and said, hey, Philip, we want to go to Facebook. We don't have our platform on Facebook. We want to move. We want to build this platform. We built it at Instagram.
Right.
We want to shift it over to Facebook. I said, cool. Let's overlay your entire follower customer base and understand what they care about and what they are, where they are. We found out that Facebook was the fourth performing platform of all the customer base. So she was about to invest hundreds of thousands of dollars into the fourth performing social media platform of where her customer base was going. The number one was not even Instagram. Instagram was number two. She had built a million followers on a platform that wasn't even the top performing. The top performing was Pinterest.
Jeez.
Her entire customer base, her entire follower were all women.
Okay. Sure.
So we also found out from the data that they were highly religious, and they wanted to know that this particular influencer, well, that they gave back to charity, they contributed to their community, things like that. Well, she had never talked about that on stage.
Right.
Guess what? It didn't cost her a dollar to get up on stage and now tell her personal story about her faith and about how she contributes a portion of her profits to charity. And that is what we find in the data. And that is what we then go implement with our clients.
What's one question or a thought or an idea you're like, all right, I was hoping Josh would ask this, but he didn't. I was like, I have probably like a dozen more questions, but I'm like, all right, we'll have to kind of like pack them down and try to get your best response to that and give to the audience. So,
I'm on the marketing side. I'm great. I think we touch base. Looks at, I go back to this a million times. Do not start your marketing campaign by guessing. What infuriates me, what I think is completely unethical, are marketing agencies that go, we just sat around our table and had a brainstorm session on your product or service.
Right.
We cannot wait to tell you. We can't wait to tell you the great ideas we came up with. I've never done that. My brain doesn't work that way because in political marketing, I've never thought like that.
Sure.
I don't guess anything. Everything I do is based first on what does the data say? Then I go, all right, we're going to brainstorm around a table on ideas and messaging and creative ideas that will move the needle on your bottom line based on what your customer wants. I love the voter. I love the politician. I love the voter more. Right?
Yeah.
I love the business owner, but I'm obsessed with the customer. And so find out what the customer thinks and make sure that you implement a marketing campaign that serves them and connects with them, not what you want to talk about. That's my main mission in everything I'm doing right now.
No, that's awesome. And interesting, when you were talking, like we did a more of an informal kind of data gathering as we took like our top, I think 15 customers, anybody that had spent five figures or whatever lifetime with us, and went and did phone interviews with them. And the main thing was they were all over 45 and none of them actually were on Facebook and Instagram.
Right.
So we're like, all
which
right.
is counterintuitive because you would think the data tells us right now that in a very broad sense that that's Facebook's marketplace right
sure.
now. Anybody
right.
older than 45. But that's the thing. You don't know until you know, right?
Right. And, oh, yeah.
And what you just said is really important. Like, of course, I have a mechanism that you can track data and do all this stuff. You don't have to go out and spend that money. You can do it like you just did. There
right.
are a million ways to skin the cat, a million ways. I'm just saying stop take the guesswork out of it. I think people are so frustrated with marketing agencies right now because they feel like there's not a lot of certainty around what they do. And
yeah.
what I want to do is kind of change that dynamic.
No, that's awesome. Well, I really appreciate you coming on Making Bank today. Guys, I hope you were listening to what Philip's saying. Go back, rewind, watch, listen to this again, and take those notes. Listen to what he's saying about the process, the formula, and then go back and you can either go do it yourself. There's data points out there that you can grab from other sources, or you can go right to Philip, and he has the main data source of everything, and utilize that. I know you wanted to give our audience an opportunity to have a free consult, a marketing consult with you guys. Is that?
Well, we've done this now. I think over 600. We call them marketing audits. You can go to philipstutz.com/audits. A 5-minute form you fill out, your publicly available digital footprint of your company. My team will spend 2 to 3 business days poring over it, and then we'll produce a 25-point, 7 to 9 page report telling you what you're doing right and what you can improve. And then we will do a 30-minute consultation call with you to answer any questions and deliver it. And if you go, holy cow, we'd love to work with you, that's cool. If you want to take it and then go implement it yourself, that's cool too. That's what it's for. So for us, that's how we want to serve the bigger audience. And like I said, we've done 600. I don't have 600 clients because, people have different needs and different wants.
Right.
But this is complimentary for anybody that wants to utilize it.
Awesome. No, that's super cool. And is that the same website where they can get more information about you and the company and everything?
Yeah, philipstutz.com. And you'll probably have it in your show notes how to spell
it. Yeah, it'll be down here below in the show notes. So, Philip, again, thank you for coming on Make It Bank. Really appreciate your time today. And just an honor to be able to dive in and grab some of that information that you're out there teaching and talking about.
Hey, listen, what I love about your show and what you're doing is this podcast is free for everybody. You serve other people first. It's the great way that I think this next generation is going to come up. Serve first, get second. And I'm grateful that you have this platform and that you serve other people. And I appreciate you having me on.
All right, man. Thanks again. I am Josh Philber. You are watching Making Bank. Get out and be extraordinary.
Thank you for listening to Making Bank. If you have enjoyed this episode, please leave a review. And sharing is caring. Follow Josh Philber on Facebook, YouTube, and Instagram for more. You can also listen to Making Bank on Amazon Alexa, Spotify, iHeartRadio, and watch on Apple TV, Success Thinkers Network, Amazon Fire, and YouTube.